Welcome to the Vibrant Living Network. Have you ever wondered what is possible beyond possible? What is the thing you've been wondering and inquiring about? Are you just feeling stuck and don't know why? Are you thinking or are you seeing? Seeing allows us to expand and have this other experience. We want to invite you for that wake-up call. We want to invite your spirit, your soul, so to be more alive, more connected. Glenn Brooks has been a life coach for over 33 years, author of Divorced to Patterns, Not Each Other, an explorer of what is possible. He has worked with people all around the world. Join us for a wake-up conversation, a dialogue with you. We will have some of the most interesting contributors. We will be talking to some of the most interesting people and have some of the most resourceful teachers, wisdom-filled people from around the world join us. Share your voice, ask the questions, become free of the known into a new world of possibility. We are going to talk about all the things you wonder about: how to live, how to heal, how to connect, how to love, how to be seen. Your life is precious. Enjoy it.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good being with you. Good morning. Good morning. Especially good morning to you.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night.
I want to take in the full buffet.
Time travel.
I want to take in the full buffet of greetings now.
Hello, hello. Welcome,
Sherry.
Hi.
Hello.
That's nice.
It's good hearing your voice, Linda. Good hearing all your voice. A blessing of the voice.
Ah, thank you so much. You too.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. There's so much that happens on that introduction. It seems like overwhelming almost. Like, how could I possibly access that unless I could exhale? Unless we could all like breathe like the Dalai Lama together and kind of just find our resonance, find our breath.
Well, we could do that on the count of three if you wanted to.
Sure.
Okay, let's do it on the count of three.
Let's
yes.
do it.
Okay.
One, two, three. Breathe deep.
Good start to the week. Love it.
Yeah.
You know what? One thing that's interesting is to be able to breathe deep safely together on the phone. because with our current circumstances, breathing together is scary, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yes. So. Yes.
So how nice if you're to be able to breathe deep.
It's like if you're exhaling deeply, step away. You need to have that social distancing, but it's just not.
I want to say one of the breakthroughs, Sherry, one of the breakthroughs we had over the last 8 days was Stacy's brilliant insight of distinguishing the world of distancing and the world of physically staying apart from each other. So
right.
the languaging of distancing is inaccurate. But also sends out the thought virus that we need to stay away from each other. It's almost like the message of cautioning isn't good for us or our immune systems.
No.
And so being an exemplifier, the power of being, diving into this quality of the power of being. So I just want to say quickly that I grew up in a world like you guys did maybe, is that all the energy was on the doing. You had to do, to have, to be. And I didn't really know there was a power in being. And yet I would have moments where I would be curious, those third space moments, like the third being in a hallway, sitting down with someone at a chess table at a post office. And I realized, oh, people talk differently and they listen differently and they exemplify differently. So an exemplifier is someone who lives in a way, breathes in a way that kind of moves others to be and take new actions. And to cultivate new awarenesses. I also want to acknowledge that over the last 24 hours or 48 hours, I've been delighted with all of you. And I want to acknowledge that Dr. Gail Randall, I did my follow-up session with Gail. It's been about a year. We've been family and deepening our relationship. And I really loved our session. I loved our session. I felt so I was going to say taken care of, but I just appreciate, I've never had intimacy with a doctor before like you. And I feel that what you brought to the session was, funny enough, healing. It's funny to say that, but you go to a doctor's appointment and you have healing in the appointment. It's not just talking about the content of what's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like a new breed of doctor is a doctor that actually has the acknowledgement of healing themselves. Mm-hmm. Like when I read Love is Letting Go of Fear, Jerry Junpowski, who wrote that book, said he had 30 years of chronic back pain. And then he realized one day he was a psychiatrist to judge and determine, basically judge and diagnose. And he said one day he realized he let go, and his back pain of 30 years let go. A new breed of physician. Mm-hmm. You're a new breed of physician. And I call you an anthropologist. So I think the ongoing questioning and dropping the habitual languaging is such an opportunity. It's sort of like we get into language, and the language that's not alive kind of traps us. And then we kind of share mm-hmm. the thought viruses. And I love about you, I love about all of you, is I love this inquiry that kind of allows us to go beyond the habitual and move into something that's both exemplifying, because we become alive. And it's not as if we have to tell someone something wise. It's sort of like this livingness has its own intelligence, and I love that about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautifully said.
Mm-hmm.
Intimacy heals.
Say that again.
Intimacy heals. Connection heals.
Yes.
And I think what it kind of makes me feel like is, sometimes to understand the concept, you go into the opposite, and there's a certain amount of protection that we have that people are going to misuse our vulnerability. And when we are in the presence of somebody who demonstrates or convinces us or allows us to feel like our vulnerability isn't going to be misused, we can connect really beautifully and heal.
Which I've experienced.
I mean,
so
I think psychology.
Yes.
I think psychology is the science for that.
And
you
then
know, it's
interesting
I say that when we bare our souls or share something from our soul to someone, they will also do that, and that's a step towards initiating the healing response.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I also think about it maybe in terms of, you know, I've been doing some writing about this. I've been certainly opened in a new way by this village of people on this call and other people who just been open. And one of the things that I've been writing about in terms of my being a psychologist and a healer in that way is, what are the conditions that people need that I can facilitate in a very in a way that's very ready, and create the conditions so people can step in and find their way to their own healing quickly? And so I've been thinking about what the conditions are. Do you, in everybody else's kind of way of doing it, are there certain things, conditions that you create in the environment that allow for people to be vulnerable and witnessed and whatever the words you used, Gail?
Yeah, I
How
think
do you
we,
create the condition?
We spoke to this before on our show about what the conditions are to get quickened healing, if you will. And, you know, part of it is trust. There has to be trust between the healer and the healee, if you will. And actually, when I worked with Valerie Hunt, we would measure this. We would put the healer with the patient or healee or whatever you want to call it, and then we would measure their frequency. And the healer would have a certain frequency, usually around in the
range of 9 cycles per second, very similar to what the Earth is, interestingly enough. And then pretty soon after the healer would be sitting with the person, maybe even before they spoke, the person starts, you know, flipping into the frequency of the healer. And then the words are added. And when the words are added and, you know, the healing occurs, the healing starts before it even really starts. So it's very fascinating. So it's really about that, you know, tuning in to the person that you're working with and being vulnerable enough to do that. I would say, like Glenn was saying, the standard relationship with your doctor, you know, is not usually like that. I'm not saying it's never like that. I'm saying it's not usually like that because they're, you know, they have 7 minutes and here's your pills and goodbye. See you in 3 months or whatever. But this is a different way of doing it. You know, they still get their remedies and whatever they need, maybe a meditation, maybe a pill, maybe an herb. But it's really that connection that is causing the healing.
I want to acknowledge when Dr. Valerie Hunt was 89 years royally young, I'd spoken to Valerie over a decade as regularly as I could. She was a scientist, had written several books on healing. Her last book, I think it's called Uncork Your Consciousness. I remember when she sent that to me, she already was making discoveries that she had made so many discoveries in this lifetime. And she told me when she had open heart surgery at 89, and she said, Glenn, she goes, I couldn't lay there. And she said, I had so much of my mission that I had to do. During the surgery, she said, come on, you guys, I want to get back to my mission. Come on, you guys. And I was like, I love, you know, when I talk about the power of being and being recognized for the power of being, and yes, being in relationship, I realized that one of the things with Valerie was, even though she held all these prestigious sort of things in the world, she always treated me like a deep relative. And I felt with her, you know, I would ask her things. I would ask her about this. There was the healer that a lot of people were raving about. And this particular healer was a very, you know, she was very rude to people, very intense. And I said to Valerie one day, I said, how do you work with her? And Valerie said to me, well, if she misbehaves, I tell her to sit down and shut up. And she spoke to me, she spoke to me in this way. I felt like I learned from her. And it was like, I was able to bridge things.
Yeah,
I loved her. I want to say,
so
Dr. Valerie Hunt.
She
was
kindness.
Incredibly kind. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's that compassion, that connection,
yeah.
And like we had yesterday,
yeah.
Glenn,
yeah.
That
yeah.
healing.
Yeah.
You know, and then
yeah.
you can add the other supplements and stuff to it. But,
and Stacey, so I love what you asked a question that I realized I've lived in this question without asking the question. I've lived in this question. And you somehow nailed it in language around what are the conditions. Did you say conditions in context? What are the conditions in context for healing?
In the environment, yeah.
That was great.
Healers, that when we sit with people or we're on the phone with them, how do we create the environment that allows for connection to happen, healing to happen, connection to happen, vulnerability, so that people can be, so we can be better exemplifiers, but also so people can receive that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, okay. I was just going to acknowledge this because when I was speaking to you on our second and third conversation, you said something that was so vulnerable. I could feel it vibrate in my chest and my heart. And I stopped to notate that because it's rare. And also because I had to just be with it a moment. It was kind of like, wow, that was – I really appreciate you. I appreciate it by you, Stacey, that you were willing to take away or let down your professional background and be there in a way that you could say to me that you're ready to bring out this other quality. And I sort of revered it because it's something in my life that at times – I was having this discussion this morning with Linda, actually, that at times – those moments when you take a risk, sometimes people could scold you or they could pull away. And I love that moment when you said to me, this is what you were aiming for in your life, and it was a risk because it was so different, and somehow in between your words, the conditions, I was sitting on the couch, and I was just taking in what you were saying, and I was noticing how it was impacting me, and I noticed that I felt safer, and I felt a little more exuberant, and that in a sense, there was a safety that was happening that was beyond the pretense of introducing ourselves. There was another state of being in the call, in the conversation, that was like wondrous and yet was rare. And so I appreciate today that you, when you said about the conditions and the context, it's so profound and powerful. And usually what people do is they think they get to work or they get to business and they have no sense of creating context and listening. They get so caught in the content, right? They get caught in the clouds rather than being what's in the sky, you know, what's in this other way of. And so that experience with you, that was very moving. And I loved your question. I love how you asked the question of how do we set the conditions in the context? Because a lot of, you know, a friend of mine, she's been practicing this thing called nonviolent communication. And when she calls me sometimes and she talks about how she talks to her son-in-law, I joke to her, it's very violent because she wants him to go to this other place, right? But and I'm laughing because in the attempt to be nonviolent, she's violent. So what? So the conditions and the context, I mean, that's in some sense, if you want to call it healing and you want to talk about the miraculous, like what are those conditions? And it's like, as an example, Dr. Norm Shirley, one of my mentors, he told me one day about his great-grandfather. And as he told me the story, I could feel my cells shifting. He basically said to me, when his great-granddad was, I think he was in his 70s, he realized that dying, that we die because we see other people grow old and die, and we get conditioned. So his granddad wrote his diary that he decided to live till 103 and live in a way he's never lived before. Now, he made a decision, a conscious decision, when he was in his 70s. And as Norm said that to me, he's 87, but he was actually 30 years younger biologically. And I thought, you know, exemplifiers kind of – I think an exemplifier kind of brings you to this place that's sort of beyond your – they bring you to a place through – I'll call it relational presence and listening that's very different than just information. And that's why, you know, clearly Stacy – Lisa, my conversation with Lisa at 1:30 in the morning last night was so moving. There's something about this other quality when we sometimes we just drop into context. Like sometimes we have meetings with people, right? And right. How does that even occur? It's such a beautiful thing. And I'm curious how it does occur. And I love that you asked that question.
Yeah, well, and I'd like to answer her question because she asked me. And so, you know, a lot of you know that I work with the medicine wheel and a lot of native principles. And that these principles are ancient when it comes to healing. I mentioned trust. Trust is the first step in the direction of the South, which is the heart. And if you open your heart to your patient, they will open their heart. And if you establish that trust, then you move into what I described physiologically, which was the frequency, which is love. You give love, you exchange love. Love is heal all, and then you move into growth, which is the third step in the medicine wheel of the South, and then you get to the God within. You connect to that God place. So that's the way that I look at it, and that's what happens with me and my patients, although a lot more. So I don't know if that – so I would be interesting how your steps, Stacy, overlay on those steps.
This is Liz. I ask you a question?
You ask
me a question. I love questions.
Yes,
ask anybody a question.
Great.
No, you asked me that question. You know, what were the steps? Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, no, but I was going to say one common thread that I see with each one of us, and it doesn't matter what, you know, whether you're an integrative medical doctor or a dog trainer or you work with businesses, is that each one of us, in Glenn especially, always listen. And it's to be heard and to have somebody listen. And as Gail said, you know, I mean, when you can feel it from your presence, you drop into a heart space and you allow somebody to pour out their wisdom or their soul or their troubles, and you listen very deeply and you take it, each word, to heart, and you disseminate it, and then on the other end you share your wisdom back. And I'm, you know, Stacey, I'm just getting to know you, but I know deeply that just from the little bit that I've learned from you, that that's what differentiates you from other practitioners of psychology, mm-hmm. because you have a listening skill. And your clients can know that you are hearing them, which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I really honor each one of you for that gift. And it really, to be an exemplifier, I think you need to be able to listen. So please, you know, continue what you were saying.
Oh, no,
so
important, Lisa. Thank you for that wise. You know, you listen to everything the person has to say. And what I find, every person comes with their own answer. And all I have to do really is listen.
So why does it take so long for people to heal, if that's what it takes?
Yeah. Honestly, it doesn't. Sometimes they walk out this door, heal. Boom.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it takes longer. But it all, each person.
All my clients take longer.
Well,
That's your book, Stacey. That's the title.
Maybe that's your dharma. I don't know. Okay.
Maybe there's a degree of honesty that it takes people longer than one time. Maybe it's a process of healing, but. Maybe people are open with me, but then when they go back into their world, they lose that moment, and they can't carry it for themselves very long in a hostile world sometimes, and they need to have the opportunity to practice it whenever they come back and to build the muscle for it.
For sure.
So this is Linda Hope. I was just wondering of the idea that certain people have the capacity to, I don't know if it's a belief or just to feel that the idea of they are already healed is an interesting way to approach. Do you find that if people are more open-hearted or more empowered to know that their truth is that they can be healed or are already healed in that respect, that the healing does occur faster in their belief system?
See, I think
that's
healing
a great question.
Before they even get here. See, I don't believe in linear time. And I believe there are low-lying truths. You know, they're just ready to come in here and pop, you know, and sometimes it takes longer. You know, everybody.
But
I hear in the question
maybe you know, I like the rethinking the words, because how you define a problem determines how you solve for it. So if they come in needing to be healed, then we are assuming they're broken. And maybe part of what we do is we remind people that they're well, that their environments have compromised them in some ways or whatever. And I mean, that's what I feel like personally.
Out of balance.
This space with all of you, that I am healed, but I kind of have forgotten a part of myself that this conversation and my conversations with Glenn and Gail and, you know, I'm one of those people. You're doing it. All of you are doing it with me. I'm being healed with you. I'm one of you. God. I'm one of them.
I love it.
You know, I want to say, Stacey, I love what you say and share very much. So what's sort of interesting, I hear a lot of people use the word psychology, a lot. It's on, you know, there's magazine, Psychology Today. Somehow when you say, I have a very fresh listening to you and the way you say it, because there's something in it that makes me curious. So as a generic term, so, as a Stacey term, I'm curious. You catch my curiosity about what could that really mean in our lives other than a clinical diagnostic with a limited terminal normality outcome? I feel
exactly.
like we're used, right?
Everybody
I
can,
right.
thinks about psychology.
And,
right.
that's, and I want to say, please, Stacey, keep bringing that to life because
yeah.
a lot of people, they fall asleep when they're a psychologist.
Yeah.
Psychology.
Or they put up a cross, like, with their fingers, and they say, back off, Stacey, back off.
Right.
Well, don't read
yeah.
my mind.
They don't
like,
really
why would
want
you want
to
your mind
face.
Read?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want mm-hmm. their mind read? You know what I mean? Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think psychology is the most sophisticated science for channeling human potential, for understanding talent and emotion and it's ironic because, you know, you listen to, you know, people who have denounced psychology or dismissed it, and they say, well, psychology is impacts or influences the market, the stock exchange, the, you know, the you know, psychology is about how people buy. So, you know, consumer psychology manipulates how they sell because of people's psychology. I mean, yeah, I think psychology is the understanding of how individuals become, how they evolve, and then how they bring themselves to the group, to belonging, and then allows that the individual and the group to create the culture. And then we're stuck in it if we're not paying attention to how we want it to be. We kind of fall asleep at the wheel and just make, to your point, Glenn, when you said,
mm-hmm.
you know, we just kind of follow, we just follow in those, you know, without thinking about the paradigm, like aging, for example.
Yeah.
You know, people.
Yeah, I mean.
People, yeah.
No, I'm one of my teachers used to call us, we play follow the follower. We play follow the follower. So we're going to get, I want to explore, I want to hear your experiences with being an exemplifier, when you were around an exemplifier. I'm also starting my Vibrant Living Challenge in a big way. I'm writing up the description right now. And hey, the thing is, your life's precious and that you're with us right now. Exhale and let's re-adjourn after a good stretch. I'm going to say it again, your life's precious. It really is this wonderful thing that we keep discovering.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact. Without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your health care provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Boom. Hello, and welcome to Vibrant Living. I'm Glenn Brooks. So the first time, an exemplifier. I hadn't heard the term, and I was sort of reacting and responding to my life in ways that I feel like what happened in my life was I always sensed there was another passage, another way. I couldn't always explain it, and it kind of led me on different paths. But I remember one day I was giving a talk to an audience of 80-year-olds and 90-year-olds. I should say 90 years, 80 years young, 90 years young, and 100 years young, at a place called Fanny Schaefer's Vegetarian Farm. And I was telling them the story of Dr. Norman Walker, who was, I think Dr. Norman Walker was 109 at the time. And I finished that talk, And I think in my life, I want you guys to think about this. When was the time you acknowledged sort of the wonder of your being, your state of being? I finished that talk, and one of the members of the audience came to me, and it was such a humbling thing because they're all like, they've been on the planet much longer than me. They had so much wisdom. He walks up to me, and he put $10 in my left pocket, and he said, keep sharing this message. And I was a teenager, and it meant so much. And then I started to determine there was another world beyond doing. Like, there was another world, another distinction that we could live out of called a state of being. So my whole coaching, when I started coaching, I got really interested. Like, how do you cultivate, kind of similar to Stacey's question, how do you cultivate the conditions and context for wonder? How do you cultivate the conditions mm-hmm. for awareness? How do you, in mm-hmm. some sense, turn someone on? How do you mm-hmm. provide that in the way you move, the way you breathe, right? The way your state of being. And then I had many other kinds of experiences. I was talking to a psychiatrist one day, and he was such an exemplifier. He was explaining to me why he does exorcisms. And he says, Glenn, I do things in my practice to bring people alive. And he goes, even if I don't believe in them. He goes, it's not about what I believe. It's about how I access and how we cultivate this thing. And it got me. It's kind of like, because I beyond a lot of people with very strong belief systems about healing, very strong belief systems about this system and that system. And in some ways, they were in some ways at war with each other. But when he said that to me, it was kind of like, he's right. Exemplifying. And that turned me on. I wanted to be around more of that. So what was your first experience of either being or being around an exemplifier? I was going to say Stacey because you were like right there.
Well, I love creating the conditions for wonder, awareness. How do you light people up, bring people alive, cultivate aliveness?
Remember our first conversation, Stacey, when we talked about being at the wedding table, what you said to me?
What did you remind me?
About the wedding table.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What did you say? What did you say to me? I loved it.
Well, every time I go to a conference or someplace where I'm going to be sitting with eight people, I always ask, if this is going to be the worst wedding table, I'm not sitting here. Are we going to be a good wedding table? Is this going to be a fun wedding table or not?
Are we going to challenge each other? Are we going to be outrageous? Are we going to dare each other to be a little bit more? Are we going to be the sedated table at the other part of the room?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, I would say that when I started to write this book on the air, it's called Unscripted Power, but really I had no idea how to unscript myself. And it was exemplifiers who came around me and said things, like when I met Paul Bragg. He said, Paul Bragg was Jocko Lane's teacher. And he said three things to me when I met him. He said, well, one is, he said, Glenn, don't get into the habit of aging. It's a bad habit. And I was thinking, no one said that to me. I've had my body 30-something years or whatever. Yeah, it seemed like a really bad habit, actually. He said, don't get in the habit of aging. He said, what other people is kind of an interruption usually. He said, don't let dead thinking interrupt your alive life. Don't let dead thinking. And then he said to kind of live what was relevant and pour your being, soul, and body into it. And he said this to me when I was standing next to with him. It was like being at the ocean. And it kept moving me because it was sort of challenging. It was sort of like, now Tony's not here today. Tony, who's Dr. Remedy Jane, the homeopath medical doctor from Ohio. But the last thing, I had this conversation with Remedy Jane, and she said to me, I'm going to have my husband check you out. And I said, this is great. I said, have him check me out and tell me what he found. I'm really curious. I know a lot of people don't like me, by the way, so please, have him share with me. So 3 weeks later, he left me such a state of being message. He just kind of said, well, I know what you do is difficult, and I appreciate all the nooks and crannies and the things that you would have to question. And he goes, we're 100% with you. And that conversation, that thing, when he said that to me and left that message, it gave me some soul juice for the next month. It's sort of like the invisible things, going back to that wonderful question, what are the conditions and context? The first time I met someone who thought I was smart, I always thought I was really dumb in school. I was sitting with a superintendent of schools in Vermont, and she acknowledged that I was smart. And I realized that no one had ever laid that out to me where I could kind of get it as a human being. You know, we say stuff to people, but sometimes they don't get it, or we don't. You know, when I met Gail, I realized Gail was doing the experience of like helping people dissolve the spells, and if you will, the retro word might be the curses of their interpretation, how they actually sense illness was in their life. So I love, Stacey, when you said it might take a certain amount of treatments or it might take a certain amount of moments, not time, to make ourselves receptive so we could even be something called well, to be something called exuberant. Because, mm-hmm. My family, it didn't exist. My father used to get up. How I woke up in the morning was him clearing the phlegm out of his throat and taking several Dristan, anti-phlegm medication, if you will. And I had no idea what healthy was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it existed. Then I went to school where I had to collapse my posture and read things that seemed so far away from my being and my body and my soul. And that was supposed to be a good schooling. So when I heard about psychology, Glenn, we're probably going to send you to this school psychologist. I was thinking, please, not that. They don't look that alive anyway. So it's the spirit in your voice when you say psychology that turns me on, because it seems like it means something when you say it. It means something. I can sense you're alive to something, and that's the thing that keeps me engaged. Like, as an example, I didn't realize there was another world out there. There was a relational world, and that sometimes the individualistic world or the personal transformation could be harmful to relationships. I never thought about that. I never got it. And then all of a sudden, right, if you just build someone up so much, you could break the union. So I got really interested in teams, unions. Mm-hmm. And there was a life to that, because what I saw happening was the habitual language and the habitual assumptions created this sort of wall, this invisible wall that we began to operate from. And I love that about you, by the way. I love you and how you like to inquire and dive into that. That's very, I find that very exuberant and exciting about you as an educator and speaker.
Well, I love it. I love that too. You know, I want to be thoughtful. You did pose a very meaningful question that probably everybody on the call has been thinking about, which is when.
And I want to go around the table and thank you for that. Thank you.
But I do think what you're saying is important, and I'm trying to find if my first exemplified experience led me to this understanding of psychology. So I'm going to take some time and think about that.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's go around. And I want to say that since deeply appreciate Stacey, deeply appreciate you all. For my conversation last night, it was in the morning to Lisa. That was so fantastic, Lisa. I loved speaking to you at 1:30 in the morning. It was uninterrupted. I loved it, and it meant a lot. It was playful, and it was helpful to my I just felt I was a little stuck last night, and I appreciated listening to you last night. Expanded my world, actually.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, and in answer to your question, Glenn, you know, and as Stacey said, you know, we're going through our mind and we're thinking about different exemplifiers. You know, many, many years ago, back before the time that essential oils were hip and cool, I went to, my uncle introduced me to Gary Young through Young Living. And I will tell you, it was so interesting and to see where one person, you know, could exemplify so many different things. He had, like you, Glenn, had never had much experience in wellness or health or people that modeled that. And he took an idea and a passion that came out of a healing experience that he needed, and he brought that and made it into a company. But it was so interesting. He would be out in the fields, in the lavender fields. He would study the plants. He would be in the laboratories. He would be in pretty much every part. And when he would host a conference or a teaching, there was always water, no soda pop, good food, you know, positive thoughts, really, truly embodying what he believed in. And, you know, that really, you know, it's wonderful when you can have models like that in your life. And, you know, with Mother's Day coming up, I mean, that was the other thing that came to my mind was, you know, how we have role models, like a mother. You know, I was blessed with a wonderful mother who was an amazing exemplifier of positivity. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be the person that I was today were it not for that. So, you know, in honor of Mother's Day, I'd like to, you know, say thank you to all the mothers. You know, I know how hard sometimes the job is. And, yeah, and fathers, too, but, you know, especially at this time of year, you know, it's a good reminder, you know, what, you know, even if you didn't have a terrific relationship with your mother, you know, I'm sure there's gifts that they shared with you that you take and carry through.
I learned that talking to my fourth grade girlfriend, Brenda Verity, for the first time in almost 40 years, because she told me how my mother picked my clothes. I hadn't thought about that in 40 years. And I realized, oh my God, my mother cared how I showed up. I never even tuned into that before. So that was great. It helped me. It's funny, Lisa, that you just said that because it showed me something. I want to ask you guys a question. We'll start with you, Lisa. Have you ever been in a place where you wanted to say something to someone, but you weren't sure if it was a good idea, or you weren't sure about it? You ever been in that place?
All the time.
All the time.
Yes. Been there many times.
All right. Yeah. I want to go around. I just want to go around and do this. I want to go around with you guys. So I was talking to Linda on Sunday. I went to the mountain. I live near a mountain called Skinner Mountain. And it was packed. I've never seen more people at Skinner Mountain. And I was sitting on the side, and I got Gail's comment to see if I did the right thing here. As a UCLA professor of medical doctor, I took a risk. So I went, my daughter calls it the halfway house. It's kind of halfway up the mountain. And I saw this woman working really hard with a mask on. And I was kind of educated that the mask and being outside and secluded, she was around nobody. Now, I must want to say sometimes we presuppose something, and I don't even think about this. But when I usually talk to people, they give me a good amount of respect, usually, not always. I'm laughing at some family members now. So I saw her and I signaled her, and she absolutely had. It was almost like I wasn't signaling her the right way or something. And so there's this moment where I'm going to share something with her, and finally she stops, and she looks at me, and she's like almost like, well, and I'm like, yes. I say to her, I go, well, you know, from my education so far, that wearing a mask when you're in seclusion, that actually you might be reabsorbing the toxins in the mask. And she looks at me, she kind of stares at me, and she goes, and this is how she, I love what she says to me, she goes, and your degrees are? I love that line. I should have said, I'm just some idiot sitting on the park bench who hasn't shaven today. Thank you. And I said, well, I'm a little bit of a journalist. But it was sort of funny. I was so struck by the interaction. I shared it with Linda, and I had a laugh about it. And I just wanted to share that because I like playing with those moments that I don't know what to say. And I've had some miraculous responses. The first response was like, I thought it was hilarious. And your degrees are. I thought that was a perfect response. So let's do this. Let's go share about an exemplifier. A moment where you were exemplifying, or you met an exemplifier, or you were in between. You took a risk. You took a risk, and your risk exemplified something that was precious to you. And of course, Sherry, my.
Go ahead.
I would just thank your sweetheart. I was just going to acknowledge Sherry and say that, of course, dogs are exemplifiers in my life. When I see a dog, particularly now when a lot of human beings are like, you see, human beings have been shocked. They just have. No matter what you think about what's going on, there's a lot of people walking around in some pretty deep shock. So when I see a dog that looks playful, I just kind of appreciate that they're wonderful exemplifiers, and that today before we get off, Sherry's going to share at least one principle from being a dog mystic that you could bring into your life today. But I want to acknowledge that dogs are exemplifiers. They're exemplifiers of wonder, noticing, and as Sherry pointed out to me earlier today, that they could pick up on someone's going to have an epileptic fit and be right there. I mean, that's so soul and bare bones. Mm-hmm. So what's an exemplifier moment, Sherry, since you're around dogs you're writing the dog mystic, the how to be in deep tune with your dog. What's something that comes to you from the animal world about exemplification?
Well, I mean, like I always say that dogs, animals are just, they have a sixth sense. They know exactly what's going on. So they can feel the energy of the person and feel exactly what's going on. I mean, like, you know, their present moment, like oneness of being in that present moment and being aware, just allows any person to feel comfortable talking to them. I mean, even if they don't understand every single word that is being said, they're there. They're being present and allowing the person to open up to them, whether it's talking to them or hugging them or you know, just allowing the person to be open and it's also the sixth sense, you know, in regards to a person that is epileptic. I mean, like there's some service dogs that they sense the seizure coming on, and they can even position their body in a certain spot where the person when the person falls and is having a seizure, instead of falling on the floor or, you know, hitting their head on a glass table or something like that, they position their body to so the person lands on them, or they are able to sense it even before to guide the person, you know. And that's the amazing part of being a service dog is they can make their owner aware of it's coming. So to prepare themselves and sit down or lay down or, you know, do something where they're there and they're showing that support. So
what's the principle? What's the mystical dog principle you want people to begin to tune into today? What's the principle that you want to share with people? What's the principle we came up with? What's one principle that you feel? And then I believe that I have a retroactive gratitude for Gail today.
Well, I mean, like,
I
you
just
know,
thought
and
of it, Gail.
Well, actually, yeah. I want to honor Sherry. I'm so glad she
yeah,
said
please,
that.
Yeah, please, because, please.
Yeah, it's. Thank I you. Mean, it's true, and it's not just dogs. It's not. It's all of animals, and it's all of nature. Because honestly, I didn't have that terrific of a childhood, so my first vibrance that I felt and became imbued with was nature. Nature was my teacher. I would run out the back door, the screen door would slam, and I would run up that tree faster than anybody. I'd get to the tippy top of that tree where it's like swinging back and forth, because I could see my horses. I could see the horses from up there. And whenever I would get a chance, I would run over to those horses, and I lived with the horses. I ran with the horses. I ate grass with the horses. I didn't have a tail, but I would tie these big bundles of willow branches on my on my waist.
I
and
love
that
it.
Was, you know, and so they were my friends, you know, and they do understand. They understand on a very deep level. And I've communicated with all kinds of animals all over the world. And what it's about is compassion. And again, trust and love. And any animal, wild or domesticated, will come to you if you exemplify those you know, principles. If you are vibrant and you're in your being self, you know, it said one who is above his intellect is one who is no longer part of his mind.
is a Buddha.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
And if you get into that spot, you're part of the all and everything, and that's what it's all about right now. I keep saying this time, mm-hmm. this part is for us to learn that, if you want to call it vibrance, I call it one-mindedness. I call it we're being a part of God, and people, the things you, if you think the right thoughts, you create your reality, and things you are thinking will be attracted to you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The future. Yeah, and thank you, Sherry, for reminding to be brave enough to say that.
Thank you. And I mean, like, that's why I started out with animals. I mean, yes, I am the dog mystic, and I have been working with dogs for 20 years, but I mean, all animals are so much more receptive. I mean, they're just present. They're present.
They don't all have all that busy stuff in their mind, right? You know?
They don't have the human monkey mind taking over of all the drama and anxiety and what the past
right.
did. What the future your is going to hold.
Exactly. That's your principle right there.
My principle, like I have three principles, but the principle that I'm going to bring up and that you brought up as well is the principle of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Once you put your trust in your dog, they sense it and it seals your bond. They're devoted to protect you no matter what their size. It doesn't matter if a dog is 2 pounds. They can still bite your ankles and draw blood. I mean, they're going to try and protect you. So
that needs to be on a T-shirt. That's funny.
It's true. It's so true. I mean, they mm-hmm. once you have that trust, and once you feel it, then mm-hmm. the animal will totally feel it.
Yeah. Give out the Dog Mystic website, Sherry, because we're building a Dog Mystic community. I don't want to hear about your experience with healing. It's a wonder, and how your dog's healing you right now. What's the website, Sherry?
The
what is
dog
the Dog
Mystic,
Mystic website?
TheDogMystic.com. TheDogMystic.com. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a graphic that you sent me on the website?
Do I have a what?
Do you have the graphic the graphic of the four was it the four winds of the four directions? Do you have that? Yeah. Do you have a logo on the website?
Well, I mean, I have my logo. My logo is
okay.
In
thank you. Thank you for letting me logo. I needed a. You know, that was my inside consciousness Jeopardy assistant there. Thank you, Lisa. So yeah, okay. I want you guys to see the logo on the Dog Mystic. It's wonderful, the Dog Mystic. Mm-hmm. So you have your website. Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me what you think of the logo. It's a mixture of myself and the animals. So. Tell me what you think.
You give your golden feedback to Sherry about her logo. You know, did you guys want to hear my retro acknowledgement to? I've been randalized many times. So Dr. Gail Randall has randalized me. She has sent me the energy and wonder of her soul and spirit, and has transcended many moments past this thing we call time. But one night I called her right when this whole virus thing was. It's kind of more than the virus. It was a thought virus. And I was one night I was going to bed. And it was about 12 o'clock. And I called Gail and I said, I don't know what it is. I just had a really like a weird ass dream. And I was like in the basement of a building. And I didn't want to go to sleep. And Gail just took me by the hand. And she said, well, go take a shower, make your bed again. And I began my net again. I just want to tell you that was one of the more significant moments as we kind of initiated into whatever this is. And your presence was so. Anyway, my gratitude for you for that, Gail.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right, a moment of. Gail, give out your, what do you call it? We have all the protocols and things. That's your Instagram.
Yeah. Oh well, my website is drgmrandall.com,
and my website is Gail, Dr. Gail Randall. So it's super easy. But here's the secret, Glenn.
I'm ready. We're all leaning into you right now.
Okay, lean in a little farther.
Okay.
You literally become what you think about. If you want that dream life, start visualizing it right now.
Mm. Beautiful.
Mm. All right. Stacy, you want to give it? Thank you, Gail. Love you so deeply. What you want to give out your sacred psychology website? You want to give out something for the audience?
Yeah. So
I love that you said that. I love your audacious truth sharing, by the way.
Okay, lean in, everybody, a little closer.
Okay.
www.stacyfeiner.com.
Thank you, Lisa. Anyway, thank you again, Lisa, for your wonderful write up at 1 in the morning,
it
was. Thank you, Chris, because we'll talk tomorrow. Thank you, Linda, for coming hanging out again. I'll be hanging out with you very soon again. And thank you for your wonder. Thank you, guys. I love you guys. Your life's precious. Enjoy it. I'm Glenn Brooks for the Vibrant Living Network. Next week, we're going to dive into the Vibrant Living Challenge and share that with you and welcome you into it. Stay safe and wonderful today.
Have a happy Mother's Day for all you mothers out there.
Thank you.
Whoop, whoop.
Love you.
Thank you. You too.